Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Welcome back. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Frank Cusimano with Martin Kilcoyne. Martin, good to be with you. How are you?
Great, and I love the Derek Chivas answer when he said they called me, and his first reaction was, how'd you get my number? That's when Jim Sterk should say, you know what, we're not going to retire your number. What do you mean, how'd I get your number?
I wonder if our next guest, one of the great columnists in the country, Pat Forty, who does have strong Mizzou connections, I wonder if he watched Derek Chivas score some buckets over the years. Pat, good to be with you. How are you?
Hey, Frank, good to be with you guys. And, yes, I sure did. Derek, I'm going to say three of my 4 years he was there, I think, maybe, or maybe it was just two. But he was really, really good. You know, he went toe-to-toe with Wayman Tisdale and Danny Manning, and Missouri was good as Kansas and Oklahoma in those days. And there were some great games, and he was certainly a character. You know, he always wore the Band-Aid somewhere on his body, and he supposedly, this I think was complete hokum, but he supposedly one of the reasons he wanted to come to Missouri was because of the journalism school. So as the sports editor of the Maneater, the student paper, I called him and asked him to come work for us, and he's like, oh, that sounds great. That's a very, very great offer. I'm really interested in that. I'll get back to you. I'm still waiting for the call.
2,580 points later, he didn't call you, huh?
Yeah, he did enough other good things at Missouri, I suppose.
Hey, Pat, as a Mizzou grad, can you separate that when looking at the news from a week ago, the NCAA scandal? It seemed to all of us that Mizzou tried to play along, do everything they could, and yet the sanctions seemed to be a bit severe. I guess my first question would be, do you think it was a make-good on kind of the UNC blunder that they had on their hands? Do you think those two are connected?
I don't know whether they're connected, but it's hard for me to look at the Missouri case and not think of the North Carolina case and view the way they completely blundered that, you know, massive academic fraud, systemic over decades involving more than 1,000 athletes, and they got away scot-free. And then you look at what Missouri did, and it's pretty remarkable that the Missouri got hammered. Now, I'm not saying what Missouri shouldn't have been punished, but you're right that the cooperation level netted seemingly no benefit, and the sanctions, I can't necessarily say they were draconian, but in viewed through the prism of North Carolina, they're just very inconsistent.
What's the likelihood Mizzou wins an appeal and gets to play in a bowl game?
It seems likely to me, or unlikely. I'm sorry, to me. You know, they can certainly argue to the end of the day, you know, that, hey, we did our best to come clean with this stuff when we found out. But usually these appeals are based on whether the NCAA, you know, simply operated in bad faith or violated its own protocols in some way here. And I think that's going to be really hard to prove that. You know, these rules and these punishments are on the books as possible punishments for these violations. So, you know, it's not like they made something up. It's not like they deviated from, you know, what is available to them in any way. So I don't like Missouri's chances on appeal here. And I do wonder, guys, if this is part and parcel of a tougher NCAA where, you know, we're going to throw hard punishments at people because they're so embarrassed by the basketball scandal that has gone on. And so I think anybody that goes before the NCAA right now better be holding their breath about what's going to happen.
And don't you think in the future, though, other universities will think twice before saying, all right, we're on your side, let's work together? I just wonder if that's the takeaway here, that schools are going to be reluctant to either trust the process or sort of, you know, open up and say, all right, here's everything we did wrong. I think if you see what Missouri did, that in the future, if I'm a school, I'd be a little leery.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the problematic message that this sends is, North Carolina fought and fought and fought and got away with it. Missouri cooperated and got hammered. Louisville cooperated and got hammered. You know, there is now a precedent that if you do go along, it's not really going to help. So why do it? You know, and I think there's been a proliferation of law firms that are often are made up of people who used to work at the NCAA, former investigators, that sort of thing, that have figured out ways to find loopholes, I guess, in NCAA cases. So those lawyers, I think, would be even in more demand going forward if you've got people who can try to, you know, lawyer your way around NCAA violations.
There is a debate around here. What's the worst part of these sanctions? A slight reduction in scholarships, a slight reduction in recruiting time, or not playing in a postseason game? And in my mind, it's clearly not playing in a postseason game. I'm wondering, you looked at Missouri's schedule. There's a realistic chance they could be 8-0 heading into Georgia. You know, they got Kelly Bryant. What do you think of Barry Odom's squad coming up?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I do think, I mean, the postseason ban is certainly the most significant restriction because, you know, theoretically they could end up going to a good bowl game or, you know, could have been eligible for a good bowl game. It could be poised for a really good season. You know, I mostly liked the way they played last year. And I think Kelly Bryant gives them a chance to kind of maintain a lot of the offensive, you know, firepower that they had. It's going to be different. He's going to be a little bit more dual threat than Drew Locke was. But, you know, they've got running backs. They've got guys to throw to. They've got pieces there. You know, I think they've got a chance. If they don't give away games, I mean, the Kentucky giveaway was just one of the worst things. I mean, it was a classic Missouri giveaway, really, in a lot of ways. And then, you know, South Carolina, the way that went down, and then, of course, the bowl game. You get on the right side of two out of those three in the future, and you're looking at a pretty special season. So I like their chances, but without a bowl game at the end of it, it's going to be a bit of a disincentive for those guys.
Pat Forte, Yahoo Sports, with us, Martin and Frank on 590 The Fan. You touched on it there, Pat, as a Mizzou alum, and we bring this up a lot when something terrible happens. Even Michael Porter Jr., all the hype, really not being able to play or have an impact. We can go back to Tony Van Zandt. We can go back to the flea kicker, the fifth down. Does every school sort of have this vibe? You're around college sports all the time. Or is there something to it that Mizzou has had a little, maybe a little undue misery over the years?
You know, I am sure every fan base can tick off, you know, 6-7 heartbreaking, disastrous things that happened. I'm sure that can happen everywhere. Missouri, I think, may have a little bit of an edge on a lot of them. I go to three things in particular where teams literally won the national championship because of one play against Missouri. Obviously, the fifth down and the flea kicker game against Nebraska. Both Colorado and Nebraska won the national championship thanks to those plays. And then the third thing was Tyus Edney's drive in the 95 NCAA tournament. Now, that was a great play. That was not aided and abetted by any flukes or any referee mismanagement or anything like that. That was an incredible play, although it would have been nice if somebody from Missouri had made him change directions one time while he was going 90 feet down the court. But, I mean, three national championships that came at your expense on one play, that I'm not sure anybody else can match up to that.
Another topic, Pat, about 11 years ago, I think, you wrote a book about our old friend Rick Pitino. I think it was Rebound Rules, The Art of Success. And I'm wondering, have you had a conversation with him in the last year or so? And do you think there's a chance he could resurface? You know, we heard the thing about how UCLA is so desperate, and he's the guy that could actually bring some attention back to a program that nobody cares about. Or do you think he's just too scarred and too bad a news that a school could bring him in?
Yeah, I talked to him probably the last time about a year ago, and maybe a couple other times within like 14 months or so. But he's not very happy with me because after the stuff blew up in September 2017, I said he needed to be fired, and he was fired. And so, you know, I understand. Look, I understand him not being happy with that, but that's what I thought was the right thing to do, and Louisville did it. Could he resurface? I don't know. I mean, here's the thing, is this stuff always has to get past the president's desk. And if you're the president at UCLA and you've got a really elite institution, probably one of the 30 best colleges and one of the top five public institutions in America, Why do you need Rick Pitino? You may not, yes, okay, there may be a basketball alumni contingent that really wants to be good again, but do you need that headache? Do you want to bring that on board? And this is where you look at, like, Southern Mississippi. You know, how? What were they thinking interviewing Art Briles and not running that past the president? Once it got to the president's desk, guess what happened? No way. And last year, Pitino's name popped up at a couple of schools, Siena, I believe, for one, Rhode Island maybe for another. When that got to the president's desk, no way. So, I mean, it's hard for me to see a president signing off on hiring Rick Pitino.
Pat, the original topic, NCAA, I'm curious, is there any recourse for schools? I mean, everybody complains about how they conduct themselves, and we used to have visits with Rick Majerus and just the nonsense that he would put up with. You know, you buy a kid a cup of coffee. Everybody complains about it. Is there any reform possible, or can the schools band together? I don't know that you can create the USFL version of the NCAA. I don't know that you can recreate it, but is there any changing the power structure that is NCAA right now?
Well, sure. I mean, schools can propose different bylaws and try to get them passed through the membership. That's why, that's who makes the rules to begin with. You know, Mark Emmert doesn't make the rules for, you know, various other presidents of the NCAA or the people that sit in Indianapolis don't make the rules. The membership makes the rules at the NCAA convention. And, you know, if Missouri doesn't like it, they can try to get together, yeah, with, you know, the rest of the SEC and then expand from there to elsewhere. You say, hey, we want to change this or we want to change that and try to get it voted through. It is within the hands of the membership. Now, what we've historically seen is everybody's pretty self-interested, and they talk like, you know, oh, yeah, you know, this and that. That's when their ox is being gored. When it's not their team, they don't care when it's not their school. So most people are like, yes, we want harder punishments. We want a deal. We're tired of cheating. We want to get rid of it. But then when it's their school, oh, it's unfair. It's unfair. So, you know, that's kind of the double standard, I think you would say, that's out there. But I don't see, you know, colleges, programs or conferences or whatever breaking away from the NCAA at any point in time. It works too well for them. If the NCAA puts on their basketball tournament and their wrestling tournament and their baseball and their softball for them, they form, you know, a scheduling body, basically, that is assisting them in all those sorts of things. The enforcement thing has been the biggest problem, and there's changes underway with enforcement and infractions. I just don't see a big movement to rearrange all that, because who's going to be in charge and who's going to take care of all the stuff the NCAA already does?
Before we let you go, is the basketball program in good hands with Konzo Martin? I know it's a disappointing SEC season. They lost Jontay Porter, pretty good recruiting class coming in. What do you see there with Mizzou basketball?
Yeah, I'm perfectly fine with Konzo there. I mean, I thought last year he did a fantastic job. I mean, the step up immediately from the Kim Anderson days, and that was without Michael Porter for, you know, virtually the entire season. This year, when Jontay Porter got hurt, I put away any expectations for them. I just thought he was their best player. Second year in a row, your best player gets hurt. The one thing that I am surprised at is he hasn't found a good ball handler. I mean, this is a terrible ball handling team, and that's how you blow games that they did against LSU, is if you can't handle the ball in key situations. And, you know, they've got to get that figured out. But I think Konzo's was a very good hire who's doing very good work right now.
And how about Mitchell 40, continuing the name, and journalist Frank and I have kids, and we've all said, go to law school, be a doctor, do anything.
Yeah, what are you thinking here, Pat?
I trust me, I know it feels like child abuse letting him go into sports journalism, but I'm proud of him. He's doing good work, and he's enjoying himself right now, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's a really nice kid and sharp and not afraid to voice opinions. He's going to be terrific. So great to see Mitchell doing well. Pat, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you, guys. My pleasure.
All right, Pat Forty joining us, national columnist for Yahoo Sports.
A lot of Mizzou out there, isn't it? Dennis Dodd is Mizzou.
Yeah.
Our local paper, Ben Fred, Ben Hockman, Derek Gould, all
Gosh,
Mizzou.
That is unbelievable. It seems like they turn out a lot more writers,
Jeff Gordon,
and broadcasters, right?
Yeah, you have
nowadays.
John Anderson at ESPN. I guess
who's the guy from the Big Ten Network who won that ESPN reality
show?
Oh,
Michael Hall.
Is he still on? Is he with?
I think he's Big Ten Network. I believe.
What about the guy that does a lot of Mizzou games on ESPN? We've had him on. Nice
Tom
guy.
Hart.
Is he a Mizzou guy? He
I know he's from Columbia.
Yeah.
I want to say he did go to Mizzou. I know he's from Columbia. You're right. For especially the last couple of years, he was basically the voice of Mizzou. But I will say your Derek Chivas interview got me my Mizzou memories kind of
right
stirring.
In your alley, right?
Oh, and I was going to play good defense because Moon McCrary did. There were so many players every Saturday you had to watch. I'm curious, do you think you could name the top 10 all-time scorers at Mizzou? Not necessarily in order. Do you think you can come up with the 10?
All right.
So we know Chivas is the all-time points leader at Mizzou.
Doug Smith.
He's number 2.
Peeler.
Number 3.
And then do we go Stipo Sundell?
I was going to say, if you don't get Stipo, that's number 4.
He retired number 1, by the way, and in rebounding. Bob Wilson was not in that group.
The shocker here might be that Sundell is not top 10.
He's not. Okay, so we're at 4 now.
And you don't have to go.
Melvin Booker's going to be in there.
He's number 7.
Okay. John Brown was a 4-year player, but didn't make the list.
No, number 16.
Willie Smith only played 2 years, so he's not going to be in
there. He's the best average, scoring average. Yeah. He was nearly 24 a game. So you've gotten Chivas, Smith, Peeler, Stipo, Booker. So I think I need 5 more.
All right, so Larry Drew. Larry Drew's not on there?
No, he's
number... He was a 4-year player.
A lot of these guys are more current, and they also, you know, got a nice 4-year run. More current.
Okay, what about Kim? Not Kim English.
He is number 13 on the list. Oh. So let's see. This guy. This guy played for Norm and Quinn. The all-time 3-point leader.
Clarence Gilbert.
Yes, he's right. Number 9.
And then let's see. So we're thinking more.
And how about another Detroit kid, kind of a big kid, played for Quinn.
Oh, Johnson.
Arthur Johnson.
Ricky Paulding on there, too?
Ricky Paulding is number 10. Okay. Arthur Johnson's number 6. Doesn't that surprise you a little bit?
Yeah, it is. So
Arthur Johnson.
So we're missing one now?
The 5th all-time. Well, let's see. Local coach here in St. Louis. He's been on the show with us.
Not Corey. Kelly Thames.
Kelly Thames is 8th. And the number 5 here is very recent. Played with Mike Anderson. Kansas City kid. Kind of quiet.
He didn't get
But he played 4 years.
Didn't get into trouble.
No. Mm-hmm. I think he had a family member who was shot and killed in Kansas City. That was real tragic.
I know what you mean.
You can picture him, right?
Yeah.
No, more recent. Marcus Denman is...
Wow.
Denman is 5th all-time. Arthur Johnson, 6th. And you said Booker, Thames, Gilbert, Paulding. Sundvold is 11th.
God, that's hard to believe. John Sundvold, the best shooter in history. And not even in the top 10.
Chivas, all these names, though, stir up some good Mizzou memories, don't they?
Yeah.
Derek Chivas, Doug Smith, Anthony Peeler, Stepanovich, Denman, Arthur Johnson, Melvin Booker, Kelly Thames, Clarence Gilbert, and Ricky Paulding, top 10. Clarence Gilbert was considered a throw-in, wasn't he, when they got dueling?
Yeah.
His teammate?
Remember just what a gunner he was. I bet his assist, you know, the points ratio was horrible.
Well, even the 3-point field goals, it doesn't say percentage. It's just the number of threes. Now, he could chuck it. And he was kind of fun to talk to. He had a little bit of edge.
Dueling, too.
Remember he got into it with Norm?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. He left. In fact, that may have been the end.
The final
of Norm.
Straw for
Norm.
Yeah,
because I think the athletic director, Mike Alden, couple of these guys were thinking about leaving, and he said, get back here. And Norm said, I'm staying in California. And then Mike Alden said, I had enough, and they brought in Quinn. So that's a pretty good list.
The stories we could tell. Chivas was great, by the way. People didn't hear it. I'm sure it'll be up later.
What's
on the website.
What's his career scoring average? It was like 19.
Scoring average
just
was
off 20.
19.9. He's got the Pujols holiday deal.
Gosh.
Just one more free throw here or there.
Is anybody else in the 20s besides Willie?
No.
Career, no.
The highest average for Mizzou basketball, Willie Smith, I wrote over, but I think it's 23.5. Chivas was 19.9, and then the next closest was Kareem Rush. At 18.9. No, I take it back. John Brown, 19.7.
Ooh, yeah. If you ask Norm who his favorite all-time player is, I think he'd still say Willie Smith, who was there for a couple of years. They could have gone to the Final Four. They got beat by that Michigan team in the regional final. They would have faced the 32-0 Indiana team in the Final Four if they would have just beaten Michigan. So,
well, Chivas was great. If people didn't hear, you should listen. Really, just polite, professional, interesting, engaging, and he still owes Pat 40 a call. We could bring these people together on this show.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back with 5 questions. This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan.